You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto and a happy 2013 to everybody. We made it through 2012. We didn't die. Civilization is still, well, the world is still here. I'm not sure how civilized we are. Art Factora, did you have a great season?
Yeah, I had a great season. The Mayans are gone, by the way. So
maybe. The Mayans, yeah, they didn't make it, but they already didn't make it, so there's no surprise there. Now, I have to ask, you told me before Christmas that it's not Christmas in the Factora household until somebody's crying. Was somebody crying?
There was no crying this year, so it was like a Christmas miracle.
It was your very own miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, that's good for you. Congratulations on
that. Thank
you. Did you get any great tech gifts?
Well, I did get, I got a tech gift that kind of, was updated. So I got, I told you before Christmas that all I wanted for Christmas was an LP player.
Yes,
but
you did.
I got one from London Drugs that has, that I could convert, although I didn't need one that wanted to convert
MP3s
into MP3s because of what this was used.
Yeah, I just get the MP3s.
It doesn't make sense.
Yes.
But I did get my LP player. I've got some LPs. I've already listened to it. Got to put the headphones on. And
now, was it better? Do you agree with
it's just a nostalgia thing.
Okay.
Now the thing is that part of the reason why I wanted it was because now I have a hobby. Now I can go into a thrift store or a record shop and spend an hour in there looking for things.
So the question is, did you buy music or did you buy George Carlin albums?
I got
or Bill Cosby.
I've only got an LP collection of like 5 LPs.
So what was the first one you bought or listened to? What was the first LP you listened to in this new generation of analog music for art?
Pearl Jam's Vitalogy.
See, you should have done. You know, I don't know.
Really,
don't know.
Way back.
Well,
like a Beatles album or something.
Maybe. You know what? Maybe a little Elton John, Yellow Brick Road. I don't know. You know,
I got time.
Yeah, you got time. You do that. That's good. Well, I got a technology gift as well. I got a $50 iTunes card.
Wow.
Well, it's hard to get me tech gifts, but it was a good Christmas. Now, here's our story. Here's what we're doing today. We're going to do a kind of a round table. We've got in studio for the first time, although we've wanted him on for a long time, Tris Hussey of iPhoneHacks.com and many other things. Tris, welcome, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Happy New Year to you as well.
And online, we also have John Beeler, who is well-known to all of our listeners. John, Happy New Year, sir.
Happy holidays to you.
Thank you. And we also have Mike Vardy from Victoria. Mike, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Good. So here is the deal. We are just going to kind of cover the top stories from the last year, talk about all of the things that were interesting last year that caught our attention, and a little bit of prediction of what's coming in the new year. Because 2012 was an interesting year in the technology world. I don't think it was a year, even though we had a lot of new products at launch, that we're going to look back and say there were real watershed products. But I think in the business and social world that there were some really compelling stories coming down the pipe. And so we'll be touching on all of those. But to begin with, we have to talk about the most current story, which Tris came in and the first thing he said was, I had a blast over Christmas going to movies playing the iPhone apps at the movie theater.
Yeah. Yeah, the Time Play app that made it debuted in the GTA. John and I went to the Vancouver premiere. It's been in the GTA in Toronto for, a year-ish. And before Christmas, I went to the Skyfall thing, and it was a lot of fun. You know, playing trivia, throwing snowballs at the screen. And my first thing everyone asked was like, well, you're going to be using your phone during the movie, which it's not. It's only before the movie.
And they do a very smart job. They tell you, allow you to play the game, and then they say, now is the time to turn off your phone.
Right. And they chide you, you know, like you're supposed to turn it off. But the other thing I was most sort of hesitant about is how responsive would this app be?
Yeah.
And I found it amazingly responsive. I mean, when I was typing things on the screen, they were right up there, and I didn't feel like, oh man, I missed the getting the prize
because of lag.
And it was fantastic. I even came second place in throwing snowballs.
And you won something?
I got scene points, and I got some MP3 downloads of the luchador from Kudo, but
okay.
You know, I'm looking forward to going to the movies again and really hardcore playing because I want to win something.
John Beeler, you went to the launch of this as well. What do you think of the new scene of the Cineplex apps in before movies?
I completely agree with Tris. I was most skeptical about the responsiveness, and you know, we're throwing snowballs at the screen and we're swiping on our phones, and you know, you can literally see it leave the end of your phone screen and come onto the screen. Like, it's that tight and responsive. So it was very impressive from that perspective. And I'm also curious to see, you know, they can fold in other types of games. Obviously, we're not going to be having snowball fights in the summertime, but I got to see it again, seeing The Hobbit over the holidays as well. And hugely popular thing with the audience, especially with kids.
Yeah. Well, I went to see two movies only over Christmas. The first one we went to was Skyfall, as you guys, which I loved, by the way. I thought it was the best James Bond movie ever. And when they announced the app, they gave us time to download it. And I thought, oh, that's stupid. I didn't download it on my iPhone. I just chatted with Shan. And then the game came up, and only one person in the theater played it. And it was a woman sitting right behind me, and she won everything. But there was only one score that came up. And I like everybody's kind of looking around. It wasn't an overly packed house. But everybody's looking around kind of going, well, that was fairly lame. But I liked the idea of the games. Then we went to see The Hobbit after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's. And it was obviously a much deeper or higher concentration of geeks in The Hobbit. And I got sent for popcorn. So when I came back, it was just ending, so I went, darn, I wanted to play it. But everybody played. They had lots. I saw all the, as I walked in the theater, everybody's head was down on their devices, and they seemed to really like it. Now, are you logging into a Wi-Fi network?
Yeah.
And so does that give you access to the internet as well for browsing and stuff before?
It should have, but it was really kind of wonky with iPhones, but it just, the closed network itself, well, I mean, not password protected, but it's sort of isolated off.
Yeah.
Was very responsive. They must have repeaters in like every auditorium in order to make it work properly.
Yeah, I imagine. Well, I imagine you're just logging off for the one auditorium.
Well, they have the one, when John and I did it, it was the one Wi-Fi spot, and then you pick the auditorium that you're in.
Okay.
So you say, you're in auditorium
12
oh, yeah. and you tap the 12, and then it syncs up with that server.
Okay.
So.
Very, very cool. Well, I'm glad to see them giving something back to the audience, because one thing I'm incredibly critical of is me paying whatever I pay to have a ticket to be advertised to. I really find that egregious. So the ads before the movies, I literally grind my teeth. But now they're giving something back. And, of course, it's a way for them to – they're going to want to benefit from it. They're going to try and get more information from us and tie in. But at least it's a little more engaging as far as the audience goes. Now, before we leave this, then, have we all seen The Hobbit?
Not yet.
You haven't seen The Hobbit. Okay. Spoiler alert. Art, have you seen it?
Yep, I did.
Okay. Mike?
Nope, not yet.
Okay, and John?
Yes.
Okay. So there's
just an HFR.
An HFR, just a minute. Well, it's only available in the high frame rate.
You can see it in IMAX as well, and 24 frames per second.
Oh, is the IMAX 24 frames?
Yeah.
But it's bigger screen and not 3D then, right? Or is it the IMAX 3D?
Everything is 3D as far as I know.
Okay. Well, no, because you can see it in high frame rate without 3D as well.
I didn't have that option.
Okay, I didn't either because of the time that I went. So I saw it in the high frame rate 3D. I won't spoil it. What did you think, John?
We had quite a long debrief afterwards, and definitely it worked better in some scenes than others. And it made it really challenging to actually see sort of, you know, what was real, what was the real actors walking on the set?
Yeah.
And what was CG? It really did a good job of sort of blending those things, I thought, at least with my experience. But then there was other times where it really felt like it was like a live action theater performance being captured.
Yes. That's a good way to put it. I didn't like it. The movie I'm kind of ambivalent about, but the high frame rate, the quality of makeup, the quality of props, the quality of costuming, they've really got to up their game if they're going to give that kind of clarity. You know what I felt like? And it's due to personal experience, I'm sure, but I felt like I was on stage in theater backstage with a bunch of actors where I could see them in the costume, whereas the audience would see them as the performer. You know, backstage, you see all the nuances of your costumes. I felt like that, especially when I was looking at the dwarves.
Yeah.
You know, I won't get into all the fluff and fill Peter Jackson turning them into Snow White and the Seven Dwarves with their singing songs, cleaning up the dishes. Absolutely freaking ridiculous.
One thing I thought, though, is that the movie didn't need to be in 3D.
No.
I don't think the 3D effects were really needed. They didn't advance the story at all.
No.
So you can easily see it at home, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, having said that, they also gave us one of the great chase scenes uh, of theatrical motion picture history.
But that chase scene, though, that felt like a video game to me.
Oh, yes, yes.
High frame rate. It felt like I was playing an Xbox game.
Okay, fair comment. But it was a good game.
No question.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm thumbs down on the whole thing. But I left the theater. Unlike leaving the Fellowship of the Ring, I could not wait for the next movie. This one here, I can wait. I'm going to go see the next one, but I can wait. You know, it'll give Jackson some time to clean things up, trying to figure it out.
Well, it was one book.
I know.
I don't understand.
They should have flipped this over. They should have done one movie with The Hobbit, and then taken each of the Lord of the Rings books and broken them into two or three, and had given us a six or seven series movie, because they missed so many things in the other one. But okay, we're getting out of the realm of technology and into the realm of fantasy. Let's jump back into the world of technology. Looking at the year that was, I don't know what is going to be the biggest story was. I think on one aspect, the business story of what's going on with Facebook is the biggest one. But overall, kind of historically looking at the technology world, Windows 8 launch, finally having a new operating system from Microsoft, launching Windows 8, launching their new versions of the operating system for the mobility devices, probably was the biggest real moment as far as impacting the most people of the year. And I kind of yawned through it. I have a problem with Microsoft's naming convention over Windows 8 and Windows Surface and Windows RT and everything named Windows. I get confused. And I live in this world.
And there's even, for the Surface, they come up with Surface, and then there's the next version of Surface, the Surface operating system that's supposed to let you run Windows apps. I don't understand how someone like, you know, my mom, who has my iPads, you could go in and make heads or tails, or my brother-in-law, or anyone who's not really, really techie.
Making a purchasing decision is going to be difficult. Now, John, you went to the Windows launch here in Vancouver where they did a press tour. I saw you there. Did I see you there, or did you go in the afternoon after I did?
We missed each other.
Yes. But they brought me into a suite, and there were so many devices that I was absolutely confused. Like, as far as choosing a notebook, there was like five or six different flavors of notebooks with different manufacturers all putting them out. And, man, I just found it really confusing. And I think that if I was making a purchasing decision, and I know I dread people asking me, which one should I buy? Because I don't know how to differentiate.
Well, at least the netbook is gone now.
Yes. Okay.
Fair. So that died.
Okay. That has gone away.
I think the purchasing decision really depends on their use case. I mean, it's the same kind of thing that happens anytime anyone asks us what kind of computer they should buy. But, I mean, I guess the positive spin on this is at least now there's lots of options, mm-hmm. possibly too many. But, yeah. I think most of us on the line right now, we're all Mac users primarily.
Yes.
But I do like what Windows 8 is doing, but I'm just not convinced that the hardware is quite there to support that sort of new way of thinking that Microsoft has gone down.
Well, let's bring Mike in, because we haven't chatted with Mike yet. Now, Mike, you are a Mac user. Are you very versed in the Windows world?
I came from the Windows world.
Okay.
I actually was a Windows user up until probably about 7 or 8 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I got into it for the video editing. But one of the things, and I wrote a piece over at the Next Web about this, is that I think that with maybe the new design, with the new idea of what they're going to be doing with Windows, you know, with Windows 8, is that we might actually get to see some really good-looking Windows apps that aren't going to cost us an arm and a leg.
You know,
I think that maybe you'll see. I mean, one of the things I'd love to see on a Windows device is a rock solid task management app, one that maybe allows people to get out of Outlook a little bit and stuff like that. So I think that they're moving in the right direction. But again, you're right. Like, there's so many choices that, you know, if you have too many choices, it can often cause paralysis. And then, well, I'll just stick with XP then. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Oh, and that to me is the biggest issue. And confusion, not just over devices, but now there's going to be, for those of us in the sandwich generation where we're trying to help our parents through these systems, as our parents start to embrace some of the nice mobility, and I love the Windows mobile phone system. I think it's a great system. But the confusion they're going to have between their desktop operating system, their tablet, and their phone operating system, which all worked a little bit differently, although they look the exact same.
Well, and the thing is that you used to, before the mobile devices were prevalent and all that, I mean, you could have more choices in your computing devices because it was just, okay, it's a laptop or a desktop. Which
yeah.
one do you want? Now there's so many different choices. And then not only that, but the use cases have increased too with the advent of social networks and and all that kind of stuff, that people are just going to, I mean, I think we're seeing, I think in 2013 we're going to see a bit of a step back from a lot of this stuff and going, whoa, slow down kind of thing. And that, having so many choices, could actually hurt them more than help them.
Okay, so guys, give me your outlook for Windows 8 for the new year. Is it thumbs up or thumbs down? And what's Microsoft going to do, just quickly?
I'm going to have to go with thumbs down, that people are just going to be confused and they're going to have to rejigger how people are going to understand it. Even if, like, the Surface tablet, you buy a 32 gig Surface tablet and 16 gigs is the operating system. There are already court cases over that. So yeah. I think Microsoft is going to have some explaining to do.
You got some explaining to do. Okay, John?
I agree with Tris. I think the biggest challenge people are going to have is when they're sitting at that store about to make a purchase, they're probably not even going to know which version comes with it. They're just going to pick the hardware first. And,
yes.
And whatever it comes with is what they're going to be stuck with.
Cause yes.
It's just too confusing. And hopefully they'll be able to upgrade or change if they need to. But I think they're going to go based on hardware first, especially because of the Windows 8. And my feeling is that it really is more compelling with a touch-capable device. So
absolutely.
One of those hybrid tablets or something like that. So.
And they are cool products. Mike?
For me, it's a mild thumbs up, because I think it's a step in the right direction. I think that they've got some of the old conventions that they've still got in mind, which they're going to have to let go of if they want to make Windows 8 a success. But I mean, honestly, it's better than what they put out in a lot of cases with some of their older operating systems ever since, you know, XP and Vista and that. So I think that it's a step forward.
Whoever thought we'd pine for XP?
Yeah. Oh, XP was so awesome.
Yeah. So that's the way we feel about it. Okay, I'm going to go off the board completely. I think next year when we talk about this, if we reconvene this exact panel, we're going to be gushing over Microsoft's operating system, because I believe this year they have to come up with a new Xbox 360 or an Xbox, and it's going to tie into the Windows 8 operating system, and we're going to see some huge benefits of that entire thing. Much like Apple's entire ecosystem is so impressive at home, if you have a Mac and if you have Apple TV and all those sorts of things, I think Microsoft, their best single product is the Xbox. It's the one that they market, I think, the least for the as far as what the consumer gets bang for the buck.
I think the problem with that idea, though, Steve, is that Xbox, to most people, automatically means gaming.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of people that don't even bother with that, right?
Well,
and so they're just going to see it and they're going to dismiss it immediately.
And that they're going to have to take that on head on when they release the next one, and they're going to have to make it more of a set-top box and media hub. And they're going to have to communicate that. And if they can't do it, I'll be wrong. And I'm perfectly happy to be wrong, but I hope I'm right, because I think that could be a fairly cool system.
I agree.
I think they're going to finally have the problem that Apple had for so many years, where people are like, Apple's just for the creatives, you know? That's what it's for. I think that's the problem they'll come across with the Xbox.
That is with the Xbox. It's for the hardcore gamers. Yep. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to return more with our end-of-the-year panel right here on Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Welcome back to Dottotech. This is our end-of-the-year panel. I have sitting in studio Tris Hussey of iPhoneHacks.com. On the phone, Mike Vardy of the Productivityist, productivityist.com. And we also have John Beeler online with us. And we are looking at the year that was with an eye to the year that is to be. Of course, Art Factor is sitting in as our erstwhile. I like that word, erstwhile. Producer, that's how we always describe you, as erstwhile.
And I'm lucky because I get to hear it once a week.
At least once a week, sometimes twice. I might do it in the wrap too.
That's true.
We'll have to see. Okay, so we've discussed Microsoft and Cineplex off the top. The next thing that the next story that really I think is the one of the real premier ones for the past year is the issues around Facebook. They had their IPO. They also made one of the most bizarre purchases of all time. Two of the most legendary purchases, I think, in the high tech world, with their purchase of Instagram, all 12 people, for $1 billion.
With a B.
With a B. Yeah, it's $1 billion.
You have to say it like Dr. Evil.
I did. I had my finger to my lips. Well, I didn't actually, but I could. But that following, and of course, they also bought, the Picture-It. Picture-It, just as it died, or not Picture-It, what was the drawing app? Draw It. Draw Something. draw something just as it.
No, didn't Zynga pick that one up?
No, it was Zynga. Was it Zynga that picked it up? Well, I might be mistaken about that. Anyways, it all pales in the Instagram thing because Instagram is in the news, and I really want to hear John Beeler's take on it because just before Christmas, Instagram released this wonderful manifesto to the world saying, here is our new licensing agreement, which we are going to share with you all. In the licensing agreement, we own you. They basically said every picture that we post, they can do whatever they want with. They can use it for any marketing purposes, etc. And the furor about it was just outstanding. And they backed off on it. John, when you saw that come forward, as a photographer that shares as many pictures as you do, what was your reaction?
There's nothing new here. I was probably one of the few people that wasn't surprised by this because I quite often see a lot of legal terms and conditions of usage. And, you know, frankly, people that put their faith in a free service mm-hmm. and upload all of their intellectual property into a free service, how do you think it gets financed? What pays for it? They market the crap out of it.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you upload some photos, I mean, I don't honestly think that Instagram's going to be selling, you know, a really crappily green filtered photo of my lunch to some marketing agency, but they could use it in some way. And
yes.
I sort of give up my rights when I use a service like that.
And well, except you don't give up the rights to your username and to have it identified and marketed so that if you took a picture of me and you while we were at Boston Pizza, having Boston Pizza be able to say, you know, Dotto Tech was at Boston Pizza enjoying yep. a, you know, this pizza. They can't
but
do that.
But those are all questions that you have to ask, though, when you take that picture and then you hit the checkboxes to submit it to Foursquare and to Instagram and Facebook mm-hmm. and all those places. You need to understand where that's going and who actually has the rights for that. I know nobody that reads the terms and conditions. And the only people
yes.
that ever do that are wannabe lawyers.
Yeah.
And even then, they tend to misinterpret the crap out of it. So it's one of those things, it's a standard thing. If it's yours and you don't want it to be used by anybody, don't put it online.
Yeah. That did you see the South Park episode where they came and took, I think, Kenny or somebody's spleen? The guys from Apple, all in the Stark sunglasses, and they go, what? It's ours. Didn't you read your last iTunes iTunes licensing?
But this is, John made the point that I think is really key that a lot of people missed was the people who read the terms and conditions, and we read them in, it was written in better real English, and from reading intellectual property lawyers' assessment, the old terms and conditions was worse.
Yeah.
The newer one gave them less rights to your stuff.
Mm.
So they reversed themselves, but they made it
understandable.
Which is the problem. Whenever you make something legalese understandable, then unfortunately people will misunderstand it, it seems.
Yeah.
Well, and they have backed off on how much access they wanted to everybody or how much they wanted to be able to use everybody's content. But
what I saw, though, is that they said they basically clarified in a blog post saying, look, we never intended to take your property. We never intended to own your property. It's just the legalese gets interpreted a certain way. And so, you know, you have to hold some of these companies at face value that that's really the intent. They don't want to piss off their prime customers, their prime you know, the users that advanced the service, right?
So, but we wouldn't, you know, you can't hold them at face value, but Facebook is not one of the companies that I would give that credit to because they have long been pushing the envelope whenever they could see a buck down the line.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, you know, this is the standard principle. And I still know lots of people that don't seem to get it just by looking at my Facebook feed right now, that they publish everything and they don't realize that, you know, your private messages, someone has the potential to look at that. So, you know, if you don't want it to be there, don't put it there. Because all it's going to take is either you or your friend that you sent a message to press the wrong button, and all of a sudden it's public, right? And same thing, you know, assuming, let's take the path where these people aren't evil, okay? Let's assume that they're not evil. There's still lots of potential opportunity for your content to be misused by other people accessing Facebook, let alone Facebook themselves.
Yes. And even if you know, if it's not the company, anybody just scraping up your picture off Facebook and then having fun with it can do whatever they want with it at that point there.
Well, how many people do you know have public profiles and they don't even realize their profiles are public?
Yes.
Right? Everything they publish has a little public button at the bottom, so it's all public. So I could subscribe to that, and I could get everything that's posted on that person's feed, and I can do what I want with it.
There was an article that I guess just before the new year, there was a reinstatement or a law in the states for electronic wiretaps without a judge's without a warrant.
Part of their Homeland Security.
Part of the Homeland Security thing, and that got very little attention. But any little change in Facebook privacy, people go nuts. It's like, there's a problem.
Yeah.
There's a disconnect here.
Mike, let's let you in. You were trying to get in.
Well, as soon as Facebook bought Instagram, I quit.
Yeah?
And the same thing happened when Stamped, which was another app I was using on iOS, when they got acquired, Foursquare. I mean, any of these... whenever I've seen something that kind of goes, okay, this isn't what I originally signed up for, or uh-oh, they're going into a place where I'm not really sure what's going to happen, I just got out. And I mean, I don't miss it. That's the thing, is I think a lot of people, I mean, I like the appeal of Instagram. I use PathNow a lot for some of that stuff because I can share it within my inner circle. But Path could get bought up, any of these. So I think it's important that people not only know what they're posting, but keep an eye on the places that they're posting things to, especially the smaller startups, so they know, okay, well, whoa, wait, Twitter just bought this, or Facebook just bought this.
Path had a lot of problems when they first launched, too, because they had some very obtuse legalese around their usage agreements and stuff like that, too. So, I mean, no one's immune, and a lot of these startups, they just cut and paste the legal terms now they can afford a lawyer. So
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, and with Path, they had to, I think it was accessing the address book or whatever, the contact list.
Yes.
And people were, up in arms, and they're like, look, this was not malicious. It's just the way we had to do it to make it work.
Yeah, in order to properly share. Now, that's the social, kind of the social and the legal side. The business side, I still am scratching my head over. Over the course of 3 days, Facebook did the deal with Instagram, $1 billion. Once again, $1 billion. They bought a company. Typically, when a company buys another company, they're buying them for their intellectual property. They're buying them for their patents. When a technology company, there is none of that with Instagram. They were 33 million users, which most of them were already Facebook users. They were already, because that's the main sharing area. It's still, to me, one of the most bizarre deals of all time, because I just don't see where the $1 billion was well spent.
No, especially since when they came out with, they've partnered with Aviary to bump up their, Twitter has bumped up with partnered with Aviary to do their photo filters. So the only thing they bought Instagram for were photo filters they could have licensed from Yahoo or Aviary or someone.
Unless it was a defensive measure where they were just trying to block Google from acquiring them, which would have given them access to 33 million Facebook users.
I think that's probably more of the play there.
Yeah. I think they wanted to say, they saw Instagram was growing and growing, and they wanted to have that piece of the pie, and that's all that was.
Oh, man. It's still, to me, it's just, it smacks of the pre-bubble type purchases that happened before the bubble burst on before the internet, the online bubble burst.
The upside of all this, though, is Flickr has seen a resurgence lately because everyone's been dumping Instagram and signing up for Flickr, and which has always been my photo sharing site of choice. So I've had a huge influx of new contacts on there as well.
And now talk to me a little bit about Flickr, John. Now, what they've upped their game as well. It's not just the fact that people are upset with Instagram and Facebook, but Flickr's stepped up to the table a bit.
Well, they've sort of been accused last couple of years of sort of languishing. They sort of were frozen in time, probably like around 2004, 2005, as far as technology-wise. So you upload your photos and you share them. That's it. But they came out with a really smart and compelling Flickr app a few weeks ago, and it really hit it out of the park as far as the functionality and the features. It basically lets you do all the same things you can do with Instagram, but it's a much closer, a much tighter, closed community that's been in existence for I don't know how many years now. So as a photographer, it's always been my preferred community because there's a lot less garbage in there. But the iOS app really, the timing couldn't have been more perfect, basically, because I think it was like the day after or the day before Instagram blew up with their legal problems, they came up with this new app, a new version of their app, and it really was perfectly timed to, be at the top of people's minds when they were looking to leave Instagram.
Now, so I haven't tried out the Flickr app itself, but is the app easier to understand and use than the Flickr site? Because I find Flickr a bit of a confusing site.
I would say so. I've been seeing some of the beta stuff that Flickr's been working on in the background for a while now, and I've been waiting for it to actually hit the mainstream. And some of those features have sort of worked their way into the app ahead of actually the main website. But it's just a really slick package, and it has all kinds of neat features, like, you know, everything you would expect an iPhone app to have, with the notifications and easy upload, batch uploading of all your photos and all that kind of stuff. It just never quite worked very well before, and now it just works beautifully.
And is the Flickr only iOS, or is it also Android?
I don't know the state of the Android app. I haven't actually checked lately. I know I just have a Nexus 7 tablet on the Android side, and they hadn't updated the app itself to even recognize my Nexus 7 as a valid Android device, so I couldn't even install it before. So, and I haven't checked recently because the iPhone version has just been great, and I actually use my iPhone to take a lot of my photos. So,
okay, I'm just looking on Google Play right now, and there is an official Flickr app on Google Play.
Yeah.
But so that's when you're talking about it. It didn't recognize your it's
the last time I checked. Yeah, I'll check too. And
yeah, we'll take a look. You know what? It's about time for us to take. Sorry, Chris.
But the other smart thing that Yahoo did was they've given everyone a 3-month trial to Flickr Pro, mm-hmm. right off the bat. Which now I had been delaying buying about the time the Instagram mess came up. It's like renewing my Flickr Pro. It's like, oh, I'll renew now. That I'll probably make a switch. And then right after that, they said, oh, by the way, we're going to give everyone three free months, and you get 3 free months as well. Even though you just renewed, we're going to tack that on. So now they're trying to attract more paying customers, which Yahoo, of course, could use.
Well, the thing is, to pay for Flickr, it's $25 for unlimited for a year. Having unlimited storage space for my photos, I have about 17 or 18,000 photos on Flickr right now. And that's one of my online backups of all my stuff. I upload the full resolution as well.
Yeah, which you can do. And of course, and in the Flickr license, those are your photos. They don't have the rights to them.
That's right.
It's just online storage. So you do have more control. Once you share them from Flickr, you lose control. But within, if you're just uploading them and keeping them private, those are yours, nobody else's.
And there are plenty of licensing options, too, on Flickr, too. Creative Commons is in there now as well. So, I mean,
The other nice thing for photographers is you can actually sign up for a Getty account, and you can actually license your photos via Getty. And so your photos automatically become part of the Getty catalog. And people, if someone wants your photo, you can license it that way, too. So there's lots of nice bells and whistles that are really photographer friendly on Flickr.
Oh, it sounds like I think it's something I should take a look more at it, because I haven't looked at it in the last little while. I just used to get frustrated with Flickr, so but I would always dip my toe in it for every couple of months. I'd go into it and try and get something done, and now I always found that a challenge. Time for break art. We're going to take a quick break. We still have a lot more to discuss on our year end show. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
It is our year end, I guess it's the year beginning. Look back at 2012, looking forward at 2013. We have Tris Hussey in studio, we have Mike Vardy, and we have John Beeler online with us. And we gave out our address, www.dottotech.com, if people want to visit our website. We should give you the other sites of our guests. iPhone Hacks is Tris Hussey's main site for all iPhone enthusiasts. They cover all the news and all of the the reports in the iPhone world. Productivityist.com is Mike Vardy's site for people who are interested in getting more out of their life, being more productive. He covers everything from technology to occasional self-help things, but I think, I don't know, self-help stuff, I don't know. And we also have John Beeler at johnbeeler.com. And John, of course, big on photography and on those. He does these crazy 3D printing things. He makes plastic come alive. And I think the Hobbit could have used you. John, the Hobbit could have used you.
Actually, the swords were 3D printed in the Hobbit.
I believe it, actually.
Yeah.
Somebody commented on Gandalf's staff saying it looked like something that you would buy from a Sharper Image, or I guess they're gone now, but something like that. That Gandalf's staff just didn't look like a real wizard staff. It looked like a prop. All
yeah,
that.
That's the benefit of the high frame rate. You get to see all the imperfections, right? It's just like when HD first happened. You got to see all the blemishes on people's faces. Now you can see all the shortcomings of the props.
And I don't want to dwell on this, but Rivendell in the early movies, it was misty. It was soft focus. It was magical. It was way too crisp and clear. There was nothing mysterious and awesome about it.
Ah. I quite liked it, but...
Okay, well, you have no soul.
Well, that's because Facebook licensed it away.
Yes, that's right. Facebook took it away. That's right. They could have done that. Okay, the news that we talked about. We've covered off the Instagram world and the Facebook world a little bit. Google world. I don't know if I want to talk about Google other than to talk about them in reference to Apple's year. It's the first full post-Steve Jobs year for Apple. And it was. I wouldn't say it was a banner year for Apple. They released some products, but... To be in my world, the products are a little bit more ho-hum than I'd hoped for, especially over Christmas. Here was my issue. As I shopped around Christmas, I was using my phone for so many things, from coupons to my loyalty codes at different stores. And as I was shopping, one person somewhere commented on how soon you'll be using your phone to pay for this. And I went, yes, you will. And then I thought, I might not. Not with my iPhone, because it bothered me when they released the iPhone 5. It bothers me more now that Apple didn't embed near-field communications in it and give us the option to kind of play with the rest of the world when it comes to those sorts of payment systems.
But, Steve, you travel to the States a lot. How many times have you been able to use NFC in the States?
Just because I can't now doesn't mean that I can't in the future. But well, this stuff explodes. You know, John, this stuff explodes when it suddenly it only takes one retailer to have it. I'll use for example. I think the biggest story in the year in Canada, as far as I'm concerned, my favorite story was the launch of Square. Square being launched in Canada, it's a story that most people didn't pay any attention to or not. But for me, I love it because for listeners who don't know, Square is an online payment system that you sign up for them. They send you a little plug that you plug into your phone or your iPad or your Android phone, and then you can take credit card payments. So if you have a garage sale, you can have people pay by credit card. If you have a little booth that you take to the local fair every summer, you can get payments by credit card. Everybody can get payments by credit card.
But they didn't launch Wallet in Canada yet, which is really more compelling for consumers.
Yes, but
because not everyone's having a garage sale or a trade show where they need to sell stuff. But I mean, I use Starbucks. I go to my yes. Starbucks and I use my iPhone to pay for it all the time.
Yes.
Because they just scan my screen.
They scan it, yeah. The barcode scan. And you think that's going to be the online payment system of choice is an on-screen scan?
Well, with Passbook and the simplicity, I just literally, it knows when I'm in my Starbucks, so it's on my home screen. I don't even have to unlock my phone to pay for my Starbucks.
Oh, in Passbook, because I still use the Starbucks app as opposed to the Passbook app.
Use the Passbook because you put in your favorite location, and then literally, because it's GPS aware, when you walk into that store, it knows you're in the store, and you don't even have to unlock your phone. It's just like one slide, and it's there.
Mm.
So, see, I don't know. I mean, there's benefits to having hardware inside, and there's also kind of not really a need to.
Yeah, I agree with John because I saw something on TechCrunch. Drew Olnoff was in San Francisco doing ice skating, and he used the PayPal integrated Square app and paid right from his phone through PayPal, and he didn't need NFC to do that. And I think that's really where it's going to go. I think we're going to go to use non-chip dependent technologies to do mobile payments where, you know, like John said, it knows you're in that store and you have an app that's tied to your credit card and you just show up at the till and you go, yes, I'd like to pay this. Done. You know, that can be done over standard Wi-Fi or other, you know.
You guys
tech.
Might be right. I just think that they missed the boat on that a little bit. But maybe I'm going to be wrong.
The other thing, though, is Rogers also launched their SIM payment system as well, which is really interesting, where you have some type of a SIM card that has the NFC chip built into it or some kind of carrier that you put your SIM card into, then you put that into your phone. So that's another workaround that they've got where you can basically charge things to your to your phone bill instead of to your credit card, which might be better for some people that, you know, you don't want to use credit cards or whatever. Like, just having options are certainly there, and it's not hardware dependent, although right now it is because you can only use it on BlackBerry apparently. But
and I don't know about trusting Rogers to be my billing agency of choice. I just think, as a Canadian, you know, we've been there before, haven't we? It doesn't work too well. Well, speaking of not things of choice, MapGate. Apple really, really dropped the ball. Here was a case where it wasn't for the best interest of the consumer when they released the iPhone 5. They put their own mapping software in, and the reason was to shut Google out of there, not to be dependent on Google in the future. So they did something that was for the best interest of Apple as opposed to the best interest of the consumer, and it kind of jumped up and bit them in the rear end.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Sort of. I think that remember when they, Google actually released the Maps app just recently, and it showed how many downloads, what was it? I can't even remember how many downloads offhand it was.
29 million, I think.
Something like that. It kind of might have been Apple's way of saying to Google, look, you need us just as much as we need you, because look how many people are using our device. So don't get coy or cocky with us in the future. I think that it was a bad... Obviously, iOS Maps was certainly not ready for prime time, and there was some shuffles at Apple because of it. But I think they've managed to maybe shine it up a little bit more than it was initially.
Mm-hmm.
I just used it the other day, and I still got taken to the wrong side of the street on a place that's not easy to turn around at. So I keep giving it another try, but I'm back on the Google Maps train.
I used it to come here. And just intentionally, because I had both apps, and it worked just fine. It got a little confused around Mount Pleasant, where I live, and because there's a lot of streets that you can't go turn left, turn right, whatever. But I thought it was fine. Now, here is my conspiracy theory thing on the whole Google Apple Maps. I read somewhere someone said part of Apple's play was to get Google to provide Apple users with turn-by-turn directions.
Yes.
Which Apple did. Which Google did when they released Maps. The other thing is, I think iOS 7, in my prognosticating hat on, is I think iOS 7 is going to let us choose different default apps, and I think Apple and Google have been working together to release several solid replacement apps so that the first ones that you can switch between, you can choose between Safari or Chrome, Mail or Gmail, Apple Maps or Google Maps, and those are going to be the first ones. And so I think it's all part of a larger plan to get Google, either intentionally or unintentionally, Apple saying do this, or they just forcing their hand, to make really solid iOS apps so there's a real compelling choice.
That would be very interesting. Just out of curiosity, quick straw poll. If you have your choices of the three, which are you choosing, Tris? For your three apps, the three apps that you can choose of the ones you mentioned. Mail or Gmail, Maps or Google Maps, and Chrome or Safari?
Gmail.
Yeah?
Safari, except on my iPad, I like Chrome better. And then for Maps, I like Apple Maps better.
Whoa. Oh, okay. John?
I'm a native apps guy, except for native apps, but except for Maps, I typically use my TomTom dedicated app.
Yeah. So you would use all of the iOS apps. You wouldn't switch. You wouldn't take advantage of any of the Google apps there.
I use them, but
for default, if you had your choice for default, if as Tris says, in iOS, in the next, or maybe two versions of iOS, you have a choice, much like you do on your desktop.
Definitely Mail and Safari, but I use Chrome for everything else.
Okay.
On every other device.
Okay. Mike?
I'm native across the board, so it'll be Mail, Safari, and Apple Maps. Although I've got Google Maps on my phone, so that'd be the one that, if anything, I would switch between. But Mail, just with the VIP function that they've added and all that stuff, that to me makes it much better.
Because I'm tempted to go the exact opposite, to go the complete Google suite. I like Chrome a lot better, and I hate Mail. It's not that I love Gmail, I just hate Mail. And as far as the, what was the third one? We had
Chrome, Safari, Maps.
Yeah, the Maps, I like Google Maps. I prefer them. But just because Apple's already got me lost several times. Okay. Well, that should be really interesting. Now, the other big news from Apple is the launch, is the dual iPad launch this year, where they launched the iPad, the next generation iPad, and then said to all those people, just kidding, we're going to actually do that again. So they got a mulligan and a do-over as they released their the as they released their Retina screen iPad just, what was it, four months later?
Six months? Yeah.
Was it 6 months? It just seemed like 4 months. 6 months later, along with the iPad mini. And I like the iPad mini form factor. Still seems to be just jumping off the shelves. But now that it's been out for a little while, what's your guys' take on it?
I still love mine. I have it in my bag. It's right there. I brought my fourth-gen iPad and my iPad mini here.
And what do you find that you use the iPad mini for? Because you have both. So where in your life, where does one fit and where does the other fit?
My iPad mini is my reading device, and my iPad fourth-gen is my writing device.
And you've got a full keyboard
setup.
So you've got it set up just like my notebook here, except you've got it on your Okay. Yep. John, did you jump on the mini bandwagon?
No, I'm going to hold out for a Retina version in a few months.
I concur. I didn't get one because I'm waiting for the Retina version too. I'm hoping they can do it thin. Mike?
I've still got my original iPad. iPad 1. I still have that one. I'll probably go to a full-sized iPad though because I use my iPad for a lot of writing and task management, and I've got a Kobo Mini for reading. And the fact that it doesn't have the glare that the iPad does.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sunny. Look, we're on the West Coast, and it's sunny today in January. So I could read outside and not have glare on my Kobo. So
for the 3 days a year.
Exactly. Although, yeah, I mean, I'm going to Vegas and San Francisco, so I'll probably get to read them there. But, no, I mean, I'll probably go with the iPad 4 or I mean, who knows, by the time this episode's over, maybe the iPad 5 will be out. Who knows?
Yeah, no kidding. You know, picking up the iPad mini, I have to say, it's the first device of Apple's in a few years that I've picked up and gone, oh, I liked it. I
almost bought it, even though it was in Retina.
It was cute. It was like a kitten. It was like the iPad kitten. It was just like, you know, you got to kind of, oh, gee, I like that.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't miss the Retina on it.
I mean,
jumping from a Retina device to it, you notice right away.
Yes.
But after a few minutes, I don't notice at all.
Okay. And also what you're using. Although the Retina display for reading will make the fonts that much better. It'll be beautiful for reading.
Yeah, I think so. But again, you know, the fact that the iPad 2 is still selling really well and it's a non-Retina device. And
I have a Retina or an iPad 2, so that's why I haven't really felt the need. I'm gonna make the jump. And I'm going to wait until the next iteration because I don't need it today. And I already have a Nexus 7 for a similar form factor, and I've always been a fan of that form factor size. So
yes, I like that form factor too. And I'm always a jumping generation too, so I still have an iPad 2 as well. I haven't jumped to the and I consider the Retina to be the next one, not the briefly lived next generation iPad that they called. We're going to take a quick break. We got one more segment with our illustrious panel right here on Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
We have our technical panel in place as we discuss the year that was, the year that is. We have Tris Hussey, we have Mike Vardy, and we have John Beeler all with us, and we've been discussing a lot of the stories from the last year. Now, I'm sure I missed it. You can't have a whole year and make sure that you cover every single story. But the one company that I still don't quite have a handle on, and I see them, they're making a lot of news there, and I like one thing that they're doing. It's Twitter. And the thing that I like is they've been narrowing their relationships. And I don't like the fact, from one aspect, that they cut people off. They're saying, you know what? We're not going to do business with you anymore. We're not going to give you access. I don't like that part as a consumer, but as a business guy, I'm going, if they've got the cojones to do that, maybe they got something. Maybe they understand their future, and maybe they're doing things that are going to make them work. So what I'm talking about is Twitter has been cutting off access to certain different apps from having direct access to Twitter. Now, if you're just a Hootsuite user, you haven't noticed it because it hasn't affected Hootsuite. But imagine if you were using Hootsuite and suddenly Hootsuite could not anymore post to Twitter. That's what we're talking about. And so they've been doing that on an ongoing basis in an effort to, I guess, assure their future. And the map for Twitter, I don't know.
I don't know either. I was thinking about this when you gave us the topic ideas. And the one thing I noticed, I used to use Twitter to catch up on news. And I was going to try to clean up my lists the other day, to clean up my news list, because it was getting too noisy. And Twitter still hasn't solved the major problem that they would need to really, I think, help it take off, is managing that flow of information. On Facebook, it's a lot easier to manage the flow of information. You can remove clutter and, You can remove clutter and remove the people you don't want to hear. But on Twitter, it's a lot harder because we got into this thing of follow lots of people follow you to clear it out.
Yeah, and that's what you get your credibility out of, having lots of followers.
Right.
So when you start filtering it down, it defeats the purpose. John?
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same boat as Tris, again. Very consistent today. It is frustrating to try to wade through it because there is so much noise on there now. And certainly, you know, I'm good friends with the Hootsuite folks, and the reality is they've built their business model on top of a service that could go away.
Mm-hmm.
And that must be something that keeps them up at night.
Yes. Now, fortunately, they've also tied that into several other, you know.
They've certainly diversified, that's for sure, and made it sort of the dashboard of choice.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Twitter's like a crazy Ivan. You just never know what they're going to do, and they're going to turn around and say, go away. And you know, they're also doing it to their own users, too. I mean, they keep doing weird things, and even the most recent little tiff that they've had with Instagram has resulted in Instagram removing their Twitter cards, so you can't even view Instagram photos in line anymore. You have to click a link and go mm-hmm. out somewhere else. And, you know, that's not good for the customer. That's good for somebody, I guess, but I'm not quite sure why Instagram would have wanted to pull that trick, but... It's turning into like a little, this weird kind of a turf war, and people are fighting over eyeballs again.
Can Twitter survive on its own?
Possibly. I mean, it's its own social network, and there's been a number of fairly high-profile bloggers lately that have abandoned a lot of other social networks and just focused on Twitter. So, it's... one of the things I've always really liked about Twitter is that you can't drone on for 16 paragraphs. You know, some people do in the course of, you know, 600 tweets, but you can easily turn that stuff off if they're really that noisy. You can just unfollow them.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is nice and succinct, and kind of like what Trish said. When I'm trying to find out what's going on in the world, I check Twitter because I'll know someone that's probably on the ground right beside the action that's happening, tweeting about it, and.
Yeah.
You know, someone will know who that person is, and it'll get to the top of my list very quickly. So,
what's frustrating to me is that we're all early adopters into Twitter. Is that they are forsaking some of the early adopters for the ones who have come on strong lately and turned it into kind of what it's become. I remember when Twitter was a bit, you know, I mean, the hashtag was created by the users, you know, and now look where it's proliferated across the web, right? So.
Yeah.
The thing that frustrates me about them is that since there's been a bit of a regime change, it is more business and less about the community that was there. And yeah, I mean, when you're starting to cut off apps like, you know, that Tapbot's Tweetbot, and you know, I mean, they're buying up other ones. I think they bought TweetDeck. They bought several in the past couple of years. And yeah, I mean, Hootsuite, sure, they've got a bunch of other social networks in the queue, but I mean,
it's basically a Twitter tool.
Yeah, yeah well, that's just it. I mean, I've been using app.net a lot more recently, and that's the one that came in this year, the Dalton Caldwell project that came in. And the big thing that it does is it reminds me of Twitter in the early days. The big difference is that you got to pay to use it, and therefore the users are paying for the service as opposed to the service kind of using the users as the collateral, more or less.
And that was my talk a couple of years ago at South by Southwest was about, you know, the fact that you build a community with the early adopters and the people that are really passionate about your platform. And then when the suits come in with the business models and you actually have to start making some money, you know, the marketing teams come in and all this other type of stuff. And then you start, you know, really embracing the newer users, but you're really just throwing out the passionate early adopters with the bathwater. And it's really frustrating.
And nowadays, the early adopters are the ones that are becoming the most influential because we're the ones that, you know, that know a lot about the social networking aspects of it. So yeah, it's frustrating. I still use Twitter, but I mean it's integral. Same with Facebook. I use Facebook too, but there are some real frustrating aspects of it where I don't devote nearly as much time.
Yeah. It's the one area of kind of social media that I just don't have an opinion because I just don't get it. I mean, I use it. I like it. But I don't know where it's going to go. I have I have an idea what's going to happen with Facebook in the future. What I think could happen. I see a plausible future. Twitter, I just go, I don't know how I don't know how it resolves. It's going to be fascinating to watch. We only have 5 minutes left, and I do want to go on to what I think is going to be my the one topic which at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of 2012, I have turned about 160 degrees in direction from where I was on them, and that is on the future of RIM. While I'm not bullish yet on the future of RIM, I think RIM has got a fighter's chance at this point here. As we move ahead, BlackBerry 10 is, I think, the right operating system for a lot of is the right answer for a lot of challenges out there, especially the ones in IT departments. And they're still solid in places like Indonesia, where they've got 50% market share, and that's the fourth most populous country in the world. In North America, where we're so up on the cachet of products like the Samsung Galaxy S and the iPhone, we miss, I think, a little bit of the actual use of the technology. And RIM, I think they got a chance. And sorry guys, we're gonna have to make it brief. But what do you think the year's gonna look like for RIM, Tris?
It's gonna be a tough sell. I mean, they're both valuable. Quantity is their patents, and I think they're going to have to sell off a lot in order to make a go of it, to make the BlackBerry 10, which I think it does look interesting, but I haven't had one in my hand to evaluate. You know, it's
okay. So you're still on the fence. Okay, John.
It's a long shot. They got one chance, and if they blow it, I think they're done. The biggest challenge with enterprise these days is to bring your own device methodology that a lot of companies are adopting, where you let the user decide, not here's your standard issue BlackBerry device like it used to be. And a lot of people have been exposed to a lot of other technology, like the Samsung Galaxy and iPhones and everything like that.
But RIM's enterprise tools allow you to manage both BlackBerry and Android and iOS devices.
Absolutely.
So they do have answers in that area, which nobody else has.
That's true. But whether their devices are going to maintain that level of interest to keep those other machines going is still to be determined. You know, they're going to need to have a compelling product or piece of hardware that people are going to buy to justify. I mean, who knows? Maybe like what Trish said, they're going to sell off everything, including the hardware division, and just focus on the enterprise software, because then
they could become an IBM. Yeah, they could do what IBM did. Okay, Mike?
RIM gets acquired this year.
Okay. By who? You?
I think it'll either be one of the big three or maybe somebody out of it, but I think they're done. I think they get acquired. I think that's the only way they survive.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, here's my prediction. Last year I would have said IBM was the place for RIM because I would have spun off the hardware division and I would have gone a completely enterprise and it would have fit perfectly in IBM's portfolio. I would have thought that would have been an outstanding purchase. But now I'm going to, again, go off the board with my final prediction of the year. I'm saying RIM turns around. And it might not be evident to all the consumers because we might not see as many BlackBerry 10 devices as you would like to see for them to turn around. But I think that their operating system, that their the buy-in by industry, by the to their management services, is going to provide a lot of kind of under the water income that we necessarily don't all see in the public. And I think that they're going to turn it around. I think RIM has got a real good chance of turning around. And again, in North America, we might not see it as much on the surface, but they're so strong overseas, and they have so many compelling stories to tell IT departments. They alleviate so much pain for them in the bring your own device world, that I think that they got a chance. And I hope they do, because I don't want to see them. Obviously, we don't want to see them turn into...
They've got one chance.
I wouldn't argue with that at all. I think this is their chance. It's make or break as far as that is concerned. And with that, I think we'll call this show done. And I need to thank, first of all, Tris Hussey, who came into studio today. Tris is at iPhoneHacks.com. Go there for all of your iPhone hack news. All of your iPhone news. Certainly, productivityist Mike Vardy. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And John Beeler. You going to come back on for Next App Wednesday, John?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there should be some good apps. But you can't use the Cineplex app. I claim it.
All right.
Okay, and Art Factora, you have any last words? You've just been sat and listened. I didn't even ask you for your sage input today.
I am taking notes, and I'm going to be the smartest guy at the next geek party.
You've been around long enough. Quick, do you think RIM's got a future?
I still laugh at the people who pull out a RIM when everyone else is playing Angry Birds on their iPhone. So okay. I think
enough said. When the first word that comes out of your mouth is as an app is Angry Birds. we go. We have run out of time for the show. Looking forward to. I hope everybody had a really great Christmas season or holiday season. And from all of us here on Dotto Tech, wishing you all a very happy New Year. As we look ahead, we look forward to about 53 more shows with you this year.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.